at the end of this leg, it comes down to these seven. At this point, I doubt JP's gonna be able to pull ahead. He's good.
Someone's having doubts, huh? Hell, I'm just trying to keep this thing interesting. You can't write me off like that. It's just a voice, pal. You don't know a damn thing about racing!
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Shoe Movie Podcast, a podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to put a four-cycle TRZ Airmaster in his car, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right, thanks. I think you're a little off base with this one.
You sure? I mean, I know it's unstable, but it's fast.
Yeah, but I am not the most handy, nor am I the fastest of all drivers. I'm good with my V6. Mm-hmm. Gets the job done.
I don't even know how many cylinders are in my car. That's how much not a car guy I am.
I would guess four based on appearances.
Yeah, I would also guess four. It gets me from point A to point B, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the show where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. I feel like our show we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services and YouTube. You can also follow us on TikTok, where I post some clips every week. But yeah, come watch movies with us. Last week, we watched Akira, the arguably most famous anime film of all time. And our connection to this week's movie was Michelle Ruff, who's an English voice actor who voiced Kaori in Akira and voices Sanashi in Redline, who's a main character, which is fun. Yeah, we watched Redline this week. Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right, so Redline is a 2009 joint directed by Takeshi Koike in his directorial debut. It follows JP, who is a cool guy racer who races in this cross-planetary race series with rockets and, you know, lasers and pretty much a death race. And he's like the best of the best, but he's tied up, and his partner is tied up with the mob, so they have to throw races and yeah, antics ensue.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact about this one: it was entirely hand animated with no CG. It took seven years to do, and it took 100,000 hand drawings.
Wow, that's impressive, actually.
Yeah,
there's no like CG at all.
Ridiculous. None. Yeah. None at all.
Wow. I'll go first, Perk. I had a really fun time with this movie. I feel like this is the closest we're ever going to get to an F-Zero movie, and I'll take it, because F-Zero is cool. But, yeah, I think the action and, like, the races are super fun to watch. I think I love... The things I love most of this movie are the world and the character designs. I think all the characters and cars look super unique and are fun to watch. And then, like, just the idea of, like... We're having this race on this planet, and they don't want us there. It's going to be like this military battle to have this race done, because there's like, you know, fuck the system. I think it's just super interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of style, not a ton of substance, but the characters work well enough. The, you know, romance between JP and Sanashi is fine. Yeah, it's got a really unique look to it. Like, the art style looks like everything is like vinyl. Which kind of works with, you know...
It's a good way to put it.
He's wearing a leather jacket and, you know, cards and stuff. I've never seen, like, an art style quite like this, and it definitely sets it apart. So, yeah, had a great time this movie.
I don't think you're being superlative enough, or maybe just loud enough. It's hard for me to imagine reviewing this movie in any other form rather than screaming. Because that's just kind of like the vibe.
Yeah,
It's absolutely bonkers, bananas off the wall, and it's so much fun because of it. I agree with most of what you said. I think the obvious standout is the animation, which is, yeah, it's a style I've never seen. I've never seen anything quite like that from an animation standpoint. And the way they mess around with speed and the cars and the sharpness of the animation was really striking.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of a almost like a visual overload on purpose, because that's what the movie is. The story is whatever. It's big race, you know. It's pretty simple, but it doesn't have to do much because you're just constantly staring at all the animation. You're right, the characters are super fun. All of the characters in the race have, you know, not extremely well-developed character, but we at least get to know who they are.
Yeah, we get their bit and what their reveal is. Yeah,
and they each get their little moment. And and I thought all the characters worked super well. The only character gripe I had is the movie's a little too horny for Sonoshi. With just like the random topless scene is like, okay.
Well, the funny thing is the line before the random topless shot is...
Oh, yes.
It's the ad for her. They're doing the deep dive on Sonoshi because they're doing a deep dive in E-Tracer. And they show like a picture of her. And she's like, oh, nice picture of my ass, guys. And then it cuts through and she's not wearing a shirt. It's like, okay, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
The movie's just also very horny in general. Like the announcers at the end, he's like, he has hit the nitro. I need to change my pants. It's like, okay, dude, like, what is going on here? So that's what I wonder. Was that the actual, like... Japanese, or is that like, let's localize this to American audience and make it a little bit like rougher? I could see it going either way there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point, but I think that the erratic nature of the commentary, it fit. Even if that's kind of a manufactured line, it fit very well with what was going on. You're right. It's probably the horniest anime movie we've watched thus far. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say.
I think so, because Ghost in the Shell had more nudity, but it wasn't horny.
No, and it's not too bad. There are just a couple moments. And to be fair, too, it's not the main central relationship is not exploitative.
No.
Because JP it's pretty clear the thing he admires most about Sonoshi is that she's just kind of a goated racer.
Yeah.
You know, which relationship built on respect rather than just like eye bulging horniness.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he knew her when she was a kid, I think helps a lot with that.
Definitely.
And him seeing her. I like that little flashback. That was a nice little tie in. Like, you could argue it's like kind of convenient, but I think it works for this movie.
Especially, another thing I liked about the flashbacks is that you can see the progression of time based on how much hair JP has.
How long his ducktail is.
When he's just a little kid and he's idolizing the racers and he just has no spike. And then when he's like a teen, he's got the half spike.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the climax, the full spike and the spike, the hair, is what gets him across the line.
I love it. I love a good ducktail, man. One of my favorite characters in One Piece has one as well. Did you catch, I'm pretty sure this is the case, so when we get the flashback and he sees the guy in like the gold convertible with the two ladies, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, he's like, I'm pretty sure that was the mob boss.
I think it is.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I kind of wish there was a confrontation there, but I also kind of like, as part of the world, it's like, oh yeah, this is where that guy turned out. He's just like having someone like rub coke in his gums while he's talking to people.
Yeah, I didn't like watching that. I didn't like watching that at all. It was gross.
Yeah.
But that's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie, it's funny because, like, and they probably are, but it seems like some of the characters are just, like, on drugs the whole time. We don't really see a lot of drugs, but the erratic and, like, just high-energy nature just fits the entire thing because, yeah, the races are insane. The guys are going super fast. Whenever the first race that opens the movie is so fun to watch, and, like, when JP pops the nitro, just the way that looks, because we've seen that in Fast and Furious, right? Like, I'm pretty sure Fast and Furious came out before this, like the original did.
Yes, it did.
And I'm assuming the first one had like the look through like the car pipes as we get to the tailpipe. So I'm sure that was an inspiration here. But it still looked badass. Like, and I love all of the technology in this world because we have technology, we have organic stuff, and we have magic. And normally I don't like when movies are like, let's just do the cool thing because I feel like it doesn't help with the story. But in this case, I don't care because this movie just is what is cool. So it's like, okay, what would be interesting? Cool tech on the cars, and then there's like a bioweapon that the general has to become into a kaiju to fight. And then we have the planet Sugargrass people like using magic to create the final runway. I'm like, yeah, this is fucking sick. Like, now this makes sense, but I don't care because this is a unique world. So it all just, it fits.
Yeah, I love, too, that the bioweapon is just called Funky Boy.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's just call him Funky Boy. I love it. No, I thought that a lot of the world building, I really appreciated that they didn't walk us through and hold our hands. Yeah. Like the dynamics of magic, like they could have done a full backstory on like the magic world, but who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The cyborg people, you could have gone full backstory. Who cares? Funky Boy could have had more intro, but once again, I don't care. It's just cool. Yeah, and they don't do much history on Redline or any of that. It's just, it's all happening, and all these aspects really help build the world and mm-hmm. make it just such a cool place to hang out for an hour and 45 minutes without, you know, boring you with the details.
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting is, like, that being said, we didn't get a ton of it. I kind of like the political implications of the Red Line in this particular case. Where, like, were they trying to, like, steal the secrets of this plan? Or were they, that planet just being, you know, too worried about stuff? Like, the idea that, like, who runs the Red Line? Who are these people? Do they have their own agenda? Again, it doesn't matter. But the fact that could be, like,
yeah,
something in the background, I think, is a fun thing to think about.
Gives you something to think about at a minimum, yeah. I know what you're saying, and... Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of depth that you can kind of go through on your own.
Yeah.
Without having to be force-fed by the movie.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't know when you said at the beginning that this was the directorial debut of Takeshi Koike. This is pretty impressive for a first movie.
It is. It's super, super amazing. Especially when you consider that it was entirely hand-drawn and the stylized nature. Like, this has a... like a, you know, bold stamp on it. Like, this is his style. So I'd be curious to check out more of his stuff.
It looks like after this, he did a bunch of Lupin the Third movies.
Okay. The style is fantastic. It's the selling point of the movie, the animation and just the stylized nature of it. It's the best part by far.
Yeah, it's great. What was your favorite mechanic on a car? If I can ask that. I can go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
I loved in the first race when Sanashi starts spinning out and she has side boosters on her car. She's like manually controlling to stop spinning. That was like very cool touch. Maybe like Interstellar, of like having like the little boosters to make sure that you align right. For having those, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just super cool, and everything got its use. Like the fact that the Magic Sisters car turned into a mech.
Yeah.
Or the fact that the Metal Maniac is literally just his car. They're one and the same. So
eats the nitrous, the ultra nitrous, whatever. Yeah. That's cool.
The tunneling guys, that was a cool little one-off.
It was something they had to like manually pedal the tunneling, where they're just like stomping on the floor super hard. That was great.
And I think the funniest of them all was the fact that JP just drives a goddamn Trans Am.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a super hover submersible ultra ship with Sanashi, and then JP just drives a Trans Am with a giant engine in it. It's
like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
I mean, it's exactly what that character would drive, though. You know, just badass leather jacket guy. He's got to drive a... like a 70s muscle car.
Yeah, it's a great way to, like, it's something familiar to us, even though we're in a very unfamiliar world, and we still get the cool sci-fi stuff, like the bounty hunters that have their own movies that are like promoting the movies while they're racing, and just absolutely insane stuff. And yeah, this very much gave me like Fast and Furious meets F-Zero, which is awesome. We need more stuff like this, I feel like. I mean, we got Fast, but like I like more sci-fi crazy shit like this. I feel like sci-fi is pretty serious overall. I'm not eating my words on that, but like I think in general sci-fi is pretty serious nowadays. It's fun to get goofy stuff like this.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I had one just now thinking about it. Was there any resolution on the military commander who turned into the kaiju?
As far as like where is he now, kind of a thing.
Yeah, did we get a conclusion to his storyline?
I think the last time we saw him, Funky Boy. Did he kill Funky Boy, or did they absorb into each other?
I don't know.
We also, I think the one thing I would cut is like the little DeZuna stuff, because I just didn't really care, and it kind of was not. It wasn't super long. Like when they're initially fighting in the bar, that's fine. But like then when he like runs into the other guys on during the race, he's like, "I need to join the race." It's like,
I don't care.
Yeah, I really don't give a shit.
It's just that that's what they put in for those characters. So yeah. I get it. And it was pretty funny. But yeah, I could see them chopping that. Obviously, the movie ends at just like pretty much it ends at the climax.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't get to see any fallout with like the any of the politicians or, you know, what becomes of the mob. Obviously, there would be room for another story on top of that. But yeah, felt weird to me that we got like no conclusion on the president, no conclusion on the military guy who turned into a super beast. Like,
well, I don't really have to care
because the movie gave me the ending I wanted.
That's one of those things where like either it's like it doesn't matter, or this movie took 7 years. Like, we need to finish this fucking movie, so we're just going to end it with the word love and just go to credits.
So goofy. I love it.
It's so goofy. I did like them both saying I love you to each other. I'm like, okay. Like, if they just kissed and then it said love, I'd be happy. But the fact they were like both like, I love you, it's like, y'all barely know each other. What are we doing here?
I did buy the chemistry, though.
And I think I love you,
I think both of them recognized each other and just weren't putting it across to each other.
Weren't saying it, yeah.
Yeah. I think they understood the history of the two of them, but yeah, they just, it was unspoken.
Sure. I was also like, what are the rules? Like, if you bet on Sonichi or JP, do you win? Do both people win? Because they grouped up? Like, how does that work?
I'll tell you. Knowing how casinos operate, no one wins.
That's all going to the house, baby.
All going to the house.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a really fun time. As far as recommendations, Fast and Furious, I think, is the only thing that's similar, just in terms of, like, campiness.
No, I got you.
You got me? What do you got?
Yeah, so I was just geeking out because, well, okay, I'll start with one obvious comparison. There was a TV series that I used to watch all the time in the morning before school on Boomerang. 1968's Wacky Races.
Never heard of that.
It's from 1968. It's a little just 20-minute show, animated cartoon where you've got all these wacky racers who each episode they go on a little race. And there's a different winner every time, except Dick Dastardly and Muttley never win because they're the bad guys.
Gotcha.
And this is like, hey, what if we made Wacky Races on acid? And I think that's great. And I didn't know that we needed Wacky Racers on acid. But
we got it.
But we got it. And thank God we did. But then the other comparison I made is when I was like 8 years old and we had a Blockbuster membership. Mm-hmm. Now I know the Zoomers in the audience won't know what that means. We would go into the store, and I think probably two dozen times my brother and I brought home 2003's Hot Wheels World Race.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Which is an absolute classic, and now I want to rewatch it. I'm not even sure it actually exists, but it's fantastic. It's just about a bunch of literally product placement. It's all just Hot Wheels cars you could buy. But they all have drivers and stories, and the main character's like a surfer dude, and it's fantastic. And pretty much they just all get recruited with like a souped up car dropped in their garage, and it's like, come to here to join the race. And then they like, once you go fast enough, you get portaled to a different dimension. And the parallels are insane. I think Takeshi Koike is a big fan of 2003's Hot Wheels World Race. That's my
take.
Very well
could be. Yeah. You were talking, I remember another one, Perk.
Mm-hmm.
A little film that I saw for my 11th birthday, directed by the Wachowskis.
Oh, Speed Racer?
Speed Racer, baby. Nice. Came out in 2008, which was right around the same time as this. Probably would have preferred to see Redline. Probably couldn't have handled it at 11 years old, but Speed Racer, a fun time. Got a similar kind of wackiness, and, you know, each character is their own deal, and there's gadgets and stuff and all that. Sure. So that's not one you could watch. But yeah, overall, Red Line, great movie. Check it out. It's not too hard to find. So,
no,
unfortunately, I mean, we couldn't find the sub, but I think the dub was totally
the dub
solid.
Was good. Yep.
All right. Well, that is our review of Red Line. Before I reveal what we're watching next week, it's time for bonus reviews. And oh boy, we got a lot this week. We've been skimping for a while because we got a lot of other stuff going on, but we really locked in this week and we got a bunch. And Perk, if I may go first.
Please.
I disrespected you and I disrespected the Malala many, many months ago. It was probably, what, in like March or April?
It was probably six months ago.
You said, I'm cashing in my Malala for the year and you're watching Little Miss Sunshine. And I said, yeah, I'll get to it. I got a lot going on right now. And then I put it off for months and months and months. And then this Saturday, I'm like, you know what? I got some free time. Let's do it. So I watched Little Miss Sunshine. And Perk, you were right. This is a fucking fantastic movie. At first, I laughed just seeing Paul Dano with emo black hair.
Yeah.
But after that, I had a fantastic time. And the cast is insane. I love all of the story arcs, all the characters. It just really brought you in really quickly, and you get it. You know, like, I think just from one of the opening scenes where there's eating dinner and it's just like Kentucky Fried Chicken, and, you know, the mom makes a salad to try to be healthy and getting everyone a Sprite and stuff. Like, yeah, you just understand like where this family's at and the conversations that happen there. And then they have to go on this insane road trip, which things keep going wrong. Like, what happens to the van is super funny. They have to push it every time they have to go anywhere.
Such a good visual.
Yeah, it's a great bit. And just seeing like Steve Carell open up and Paul Dano's kind of journey, and the grandpa and the dad, like Greg Kinnear as like the optimistic asshole dad, is fantastic. Toni Collette trying to hold it all together. Like, yeah, it's an absolutely just fantastic film. And it's definitely can be very depressing, but by the end, I think it has a really nice resolution. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I think the end of that movie is just one of my favorite cathartic moments in film. It's just when they all get up there and they're all dancing. It's just, it's so goofy, but it's like, it's, this is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah. I really, really, really enjoyed it. If I had to critique it, I feel like maybe they had like an arc for Toni Collette and just had to cut it. Cause she's more just there kind of holding it all together. She doesn't really have her own things to work out. And they, you know, she's divorced, we find out, but that's not really like, I figure maybe there's something with that where maybe she, like, I don't know, threatened to divorce Greg Kinnear or something, but it's fine. They didn't need to make this movie longer. It was perfect length. And yeah, it was just great. And it was a perfect blend of comedy and heartfelt stuff. Like, the movie is so funny.
In so many moments, it is laugh out loud funny, but then you also have moments like Alan Arkin's conversation with Abigail Breslin at the hotel. Yeah.
That's probably the most powerful scene in the film for me.
Such a wonderful moment. It tugs at the heartstrings every time.
Yeah. But and then they have to do what they do with Alan Arkin later, which is just hilarious. So yeah, highly recommend this movie. Perk nailed the Malala.
I got you.
So yeah, it was great. But Perk, I feel like that wasn't enough. I, you know, disrespected you for too long. I'm like, I got to do something else to make it up to him. So I watched another film that Saturday. I watched The Lobster. One of Perk's favorite movies.
On purpose. No.
I would have done In Bruges, but it's not streaming. But I'm like, you know what? I got to do The Lobster. I got to do it for Perk. Overall, I liked it. Like, I think.
Okay.
I've talked before in this podcast how dark comedies normally don't work for me. Yeah. But I definitely was able to laugh in this movie. Like, there is some really, really, really funny stuff. I think my favorite bit was Olivia Colman. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get the whole premise here, but basically in the future or near future, the society is set up where you have to be in a relationship. And if you're not, you get sent to this hotel with single people. And if you don't find a partner in 45 days, then you get turned into an animal, which is, you know, of course. But, you know, one of the friends of the main character, you know, finds a partner and they're coupling up, and Olivia Colman's like, you know, if there's any arguments that you guys can't resolve on your own, we'll assign you a child. That usually helps. Like, And just like all of like the skits that are done at the hotel to like explain why it's better to be in a relationship than to not, than to be alone are hilarious. And I think like the first act of the film was about what I expected based on the premise and things I've heard from you about it, you know? So yeah, that tracks. The second act is just hilarious for, because it's the exact opposite and equally absurd. I think it is a bit, overall, the movie is maybe a little bit long and it's very slow.
It definitely is slow for sure, especially the second half.
But the final beat, the way we ends, like I saw it coming, but it still is just so absurd and funny and pathetic. Like, and it, yeah, it fits perfectly.
The whole movie is really just a critique of dating culture.
Yeah.
And throughout the movie, you see like how stupid it is that people are like trying to find a partner literally just based on like one commonality.
Yeah.
And when it boils down in the end and it's like, oh, Rachel Weisz and Colin Farrell, they like bond over the fact that they both wear prescription lenses. And it's
they're
like,
both short-sighted.
Yeah. And of course, that comes back to bite in a really funny way.
Yeah.
This movie just has a ton of really good setup and payoff.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned earlier with the, if you're having troubles, we'll assign you a child. That usually helps. The fact that then later Colin Farrell ends up on that guy's boat.
Yeah.
And he walks in and it's that guy, the wife, and they have two kids.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's because you built your relationship on one commonality that wasn't even real.
Yeah, well, even before that, we see them with their kid, and he kicks her in the leg because he's trying to impress the girl he's trying to partner with. And yeah, like, I think overall, I really liked the commentary. I think, I don't know, I maybe wish there was a little bit more or more variation of it with that runtime. Because I don't want to spoil like, what the second act is, but like, because we go to the second act, that's a whole different kind of set of things, which are equally fun to critique. But yeah, I think I would have liked a little bit more. But overall, like, yeah, I think the comedy mostly worked for me. The story is fascinating. I think it's a really like fun idea for a story. And yeah, I definitely liked it more than I thought I would. I thought I was going to finish the movie like, oh, that was too weird for me or that was too dark. But I'm like, no, I get it. I get why you like it. It's not like my favorite movie of all time, but like I enjoyed it overall.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that is one of the movies that I find like people I talk to are so polarized
really
on. Like, shout out to my brother who's not going to listen to this because we're talking about anime. he vehemently hates The Lobster.
It's just, really?
It's not the movie for him. And that's the thing is, I get it. I can definitely see why this would not resonate with some people.
I don't get it. Like, I can see you saying it's too slow or too boring. I can't understand vehemently hating it. I think all of, like, the things they do with the premise all make sense to me, and like they're interesting and funny.
That's fair. Well, I'm glad to hear it, because yeah, this is there was a term coined when I was in college, Perkins movie, and this is the prototypical Perkins movie, because it's some nonsense that no one's heard of, but I love, and then it's probably just me who loves it. But in this case, it's a little bit more broad than that. A lot of people like The Lobster, but
yeah,
I'm glad to hear you gave it a shot. In Bruges is far more approachable, but yeah, not streaming. that's how it goes.
One last thing I want to mention about The Lobster, which is so fascinating, is like the acting is like intentionally bad. Or rather, like, they're not, like, being bad actors, but, like, everyone in the movie is so stilted and awkward.
Yes.
And I think it's because the way in that society, it's, like, you have to, like, you can't be true to yourself. Like, you have to appeal to other people in order to survive. So, like, everyone is, like, trying to, like, make everyone else like them. But it results in just, like, everyone just comes off so awkward. And, like, it's, like, almost hard to watch, but like it makes sense and I get it, but it's just, it's such an interesting choice. I think it works, but it was like, okay, like
that I might argue, also, like,
yeah,
for context, that is a trademark of Yorgos Lanthimos movies, is just the weird, like, strict cadence deadpan, at least from the ones I've seen, which I've also seen Killing of a Sacred Deer and The Favorite.
Okay.
A lot of, it's like, you know how you can absolutely tell when someone's acting like they're in a Wes Anderson movie? It's kind of like that. There's a very distinct style that actors have when they're in Lanthimos movies. And Colin Farrell has it nailed down to a T. But yeah, that deadpan persists. And I think you're right. I think it's because a lot of his movies have, you know, social commentary and making the characters kind of a blank slate almost brings out and emphasizes what you should be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I just interpreted it as like, you can't like piss anybody off too much because you're trying to find a partner. If you don't, then you're fucked. Even if you're with that partner, they might leave you. So you have to, and then you're fucked again. So like you have to always be like, you know, being very careful. So
how did you feel about, to just poke your brain a little more, how did you feel about the, and we don't need to get spoilery, but the career hunter woman and their dynamic? Specifically one scene in particular that I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, one scene is like super fucked, but like I understand why it happened. Like the way her character is set up, everything
fits
tracks.
Her character perfectly, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, super fucked up, and it's like, I didn't need to see that image. But, it made sense. It wasn't like, that's outrageous. Like, they set her up as having no emotion, and she was, like, testing him in many different ways, and it's like, he failed the test, so I get what happened. But
but for anyone who's eager to check out this movie and maybe sensitive on some topics, this would be a good movie to visit. DoesTheDogDie.com. Just as a tip off there for you.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, no. I liked it more than I thought I would, and I'm glad I watched it.
There All right, cool.
Burke, what'd you watch this week?
This over the last week, because apparently last weekend or at time of recording 2 weekends ago, it was Batman Day, which sounds made up to me. I don't know why it's Batman Day other than the fact that probably because Warner Brothers has nothing coming into theaters and they want to make more money.
I mean, it's been a thing for a long time, but yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight was back in theaters, which... That is a movie that I did not get the chance to see on its first run because I was too small. So I was really eager for the opportunity to catch this one on the big screen because, you know, what a movie to experience on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So in honor of that, before that showing, I watched Batman Begins again.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterward, I watched The Dark Knight Rises. So I got the full Nolan Batman trilogy over the last week. Start at the start. Batman Begins. I never give credit to that movie. It doesn't occupy as much real estate in my mind. But it is a very, very good intro superhero origin story. Albeit it is a tad on the formulaic side, and it feels like that the Batman Begins feels closer to other origin stories than the next two movies feel to any other superhero movie.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But still, they hit everything right. Cillian Murphy's great as the pseudo antagonist. Liam Neeson's always fun. Christian Bale he's my Batman. So I like Robert Pattinson, and I even really like Ben Affleck's portrayal too, but Christian Bale's still top of that mountain for me. Just overall it's not too long. The climax actually it goes by pretty quick, which I think Nolan does a pretty good job on pacing usually, but
mm-hmm.
Batman Begins overall is just, it's a really solid start to a franchise. And I think it's actually come around because people give it so much underrated cred that I think now it's barely rated.
Yeah.
Whereas on the flip side of that, which we'll get to, I think The Dark Knight Rises, everyone has now gone full underrating on that. So I think, or like everyone hates on that so much that I think it's become underrated. So there's kind of been a swing in that. But second was The Dark Knight, which, as I mentioned, waited 15 years to see it in a theater, and someone brought a toddler. Oh boy. To a 7:15 showing on a Tuesday night, we got out of the theater at about 10:15, and you brought a kid who's maybe 3.
To a very violent film, also.
Yes, and the kid was young enough that he was too young to actually understand what was happening on the screen. But if you show like a 5 or 6 year old Two-Face from The Dark Knight.
Oh yeah, nightmares.
Yeah, it'll scar their brain. So this kid was actually too young to even comprehend what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunate for the kid, but he spent pretty much the whole movie babbling, running up and down the aisle they were sitting in, and just like almost impeccably timing making noise to like the quiet moments. And a couple times like the parent like took him to the bathroom or something, but they'd come back within like 5 minutes, and it's just like, yeah. God, oh, I get it. You paid for your kid to be here, but you paid $5 to ruin everyone else's experience.
Yeah.
It's
not like you can't watch that movie at home either.
You absolutely can.
It's not like it's a new movie.
It was Movie Tuesday, so tickets are cheaper, but with all that money you save, pay the neighbor kid to come watch your toddler for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But this officially puts a line in the sand. With 2020 and theaters being empty, you kind of lost that fun communal vibe of a full theater. I am now ready to go back to empty theaters. officially now, this is the end of that. Because there is obviously a charm to seeing a movie in a full theater. Like Barbie this summer that I saw in a fully sold out show was just fantastic because the whole crowd was just loving it and having a good time. But you know what's great about an empty theater? If it's just me, no one's going to be distracting me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry. So rant over. Basically, a tot came through to to ruin the showing I waited 15 years to see. But now that I know Batman Weekend or whatever is a thing, I'll just go see it again.
Yeah.
Because this is a movie that I love every time. Oh, yeah, I didn't even talk about the movie. Should probably do that. Dark Knight is fantastic. It's my favorite superhero movie. It's a 5 stars, 10 out of 10, 100%, whatever you want to say. It's just story, great. Antagonist, the best in probably top 10 movie yep. antagonists of all time. In Joker, kind of slept on just because of the shadow he's standing in, but Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face is also fantastic.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman as Gordon is always strong. Bale's Batman is good. I actually think because he's on screen as Bruce Wayne in this movie a lot more than the next, which I think he's a really good Bruce Wayne too. And yeah, Heath Ledger tragically taken too early, but
mm-hmm.
this what a magnum opus to have to put a crown on your career. And like the little things too, like the traps he sets up are so fun. I forgot that it was even in this movie because I kind of blur the lines, but the two ferries where you've got the ferry full of prisoners yeah. and the ferry full of like families and
mm-hmm.
one of you has to blow up the other. Such a good bit.
Oh yeah. My favorite Joker is like a very, very intelligent Joker. We don't always get it, but yeah, when we do, it's fantastic.
Well, a lot of people criticize this Joker portrayal because everything is so planned and that's not really in the Joker.
That's a fucking lie. In the comics, he's super planned out.
Well, because he's supposedly all chaos or whatever, but
yeah.
I don't even care about, I mean, I'm not a comic book reader, so I don't mm-hmm. really care if they're faithful, but what they did with the character is amazing.
Yeah.
What else did I have?
Let me ask you this. Who's the better Rachel? Maggie Gyllenhaal or I'm blanking. Was it?
It's Katie Holmes, I think. Thank for you. Me, I think Katie Holmes. Mm. But splitting hairs because Nolan has never been known to write very good female characters, so neither of them really have too much to do. Maggie Gyllenhaal is really good, and actually Maggie Gyllenhaal probably has more to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, talk about your all-time backfires, man, Katie Holmes. She didn't shoot this movie because she was filming Mad Money. Jacob, have you ever heard of Mad Money?
Briefly, but no, yeah, not really.
Like, I've heard of it as like a TV show on one of them networks where they talk about stocks.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a movie called Mad Money. Katie Holmes, you should have been in The Dark Knight, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I love start to finish. And then we'll wrap. I'm rambling, but wrap with The Dark Knight Rises, which I think is at this point overhated. I really like The Dark Knight Rises.
So do I.
I will admit it has flaws, but I think Bane is great because Tom Hardy is an amazing screen presence. The Miranda Tate twist, okay, you can be mad about that, but the first time I watched it, I was blown away.
Same.
And this is the movie where Christian Bale plays Bruce Wayne the least, which I think is it kind of, I don't know, it limits what he can really bring because the, you know, Batman character is just talks gravelly. There's not all that much to it. So I don't think he's the strongest point of the movie, but what they do with Gordon in this one's great. The mechanic of breaking, like trapping the police officers and breaking out all the criminals. It's just so creative.
Mm-hmm.
And everything with the prison, I love, absolutely love everything about that too. And yeah, I just like, I don't know. People have come to be like nitpicky about everything. Like, well, how is he out on the ice? Or how did he get from, you know, Catwoman at that bridge to Gordon within seconds? And it's like, guys,
he's Batman,
who cares? why are we nitpicking on like his transit? I don't know. It's too long, sure.
Yeah.
And you could say that the Miranda Tate like twist is not great. I think it's fine, maybe because I'm a big fan of Marion Cotillard. Cotillard, French, whatever. But it worked for me. Anne Hathaway is a really fantastic actress, and I thought she was really good as Catwoman. I don't know, just like talked about it again. It's a really strong movie. I love all the set pieces. Get chills down my spine every time they do that full cut to silent with the kid singing the national anthem at the football stadium.
Yeah.
Great moments for sure. So there's not too much that I would actually pick on in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really love that movie. I think it's way overhated. If you're like saying it's like the worst film of all time, it's like, all right, no. Like, it's a solid movie. It's fun to watch.
A reviewer I follow gave it like 1 star, and I'm like, in what world is this 1 star?
Yeah, that's just, I mean, it's expectation. They went in with too hot of expectations.
Yeah.
As opposed to just judging the movie as it is.
Right. And I mean, I have the added context that people didn't at the time, where we've seen a ton of really mediocre or subpar superhero movies since then. So maybe that's inflating my opinion a little bit, but I don't know. I'm a fan. Always be.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. Another thing I watched this week, Perk. I took a break from the show for a while because I was playing games and stuff, but I finally finished season one of Psycho Pass. I checked this on the podcast a few episodes ago. This is an anime about a futuristic society where the government can like read your psychological state, so they can tell if you're about to commit a crime or not, and then you just land it bit in the bud, kind of Minority Report-esque. And it follows a police force dealing with someone who can evade these systems. And it's like, how can you do it? So I finished the first half, and that was the first time I talked about it. And I think the first half of the season is insanely strong. It ends on a climax that is like just, yeah, incredible. And then I was worried because a lot of times with anime, if it's a 22 to 26 episode season, there's like a mid-season climax, and then like it gets really slow for a while, and then we finally get to like the big climax at the end. This one only had like one or two episodes where it slowed down, and then we're back, baby. And we're just, it's interesting again. We're moving the plot forward. And the way the season ended was so perfect. Like, I this is an S-tier rank season television for me. I think it's outstanding. Great exploration of themes and like what is a utopian society, like how, what is the best society humans can kind of work towards? How do you maintain that society? And yeah, just all the futuristic themes, I think it's just, it's super awesome and fascinating. And the characters are incredible. And I love the main character, how she kind of progresses and transforms throughout this season. Yeah, I just absolutely loved it. I can't recommend it enough if you're into, if you want more cyberpunky type stories. We've been seeing a lot on this podcast recently with Akira and Ghost in the Shell and stuff. If you want more, man, Cycle Pass is absolutely incredible. So I can't wait to watch season two. There's two more seasons and a couple movies, so I'm definitely going to be going down the rabbit hole there. But yeah, absolutely loved it. Burke, nice. Back to you.
Yeah, all right. I also finished a season of a show.
Can I guess?
Yeah, you can.
After Party.
No.
Damn.
It surprised me even, because I didn't realize that the season was ending, but it was the new season of Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
It wrapped up. Only
it's already over?
Yeah,
like it just
only,
started.
Only 10 episodes this time.
Okay.
Which, whatever. Just renew it.
Yeah.
Just make more. Overall, I think it's good. It's, you know, they're not touching the heights that the show has hit in the past, but they're also, people will disagree with me on this, but they're not like scraping the bottom of the barrel. These are, at worst, these are like baseline, decent Futurama episodes. There's one or two that I think stand out as really, really solid. I think the season finale especially is probably up there. I'm not going to say top 10, but it's probably top 25. It's a really fantastic episode with a great premise. Overall, my biggest concern coming into the new season of Futurama was that it was going to be bad. I was so concerned that I didn't get it tattooed on my body. My fears were turned away, though. It's the Futurama I've always loved. It's just updating it to talk about more current events, which has always kind of been a thing that the show has done. And yeah, it's still got that clever wit to it. The laughs per minute it's better than most things I watch, because I watch a lot of funny things where it's funny, but I might crack a smile.
Yeah.
There's at least a moment in every episode of Futurama where I like have a giggle, a legitimate like giggle, if not a belly laugh on certain occasions, but, and just the creativity and the writing is awesome. The ninth episode of the season was an anthology. Everyone on the internet seems to think it's the worst episode of the show, of the whole series. I don't think so. I liked it a lot. Specifically because they just do some stupid creative stuff. Like, there's one of the anthologies is the whole team, the whole world, it's Hot Wheels. So they're all cars that are like dressed up like the character models.
Mm-hmm.
And they just drive around on these big orange tracks and stuff, which face value seems like a decent premise. But then they build on that because also it's The Ring. So there's like a psycho murderer in the Hot Wheels universe who's calling all of the team members and asking them if they need to update their car's warranty. And then they go to the warranty office and get killed. And it's just, the whoever thought to like, first of all, make the whole gang into Hot Wheels cars. And then what if we also turn it into The Ring? Like, it's just, it's that kind of stupid stuff that I love about the show. So
yeah.
Glad to say Futurama is still doing well for me, even if some people on the internet are going to be mad.
What are the odds of another season?
I think probably pretty high, although I don't do the numbers for Hulu, and I don't really understand how at this point streaming services assess stuff like that. Like, because you can have viewership numbers, but if everyone who views it already had Hulu, then it's not a profitable show for you. So,
yeah, I mean, well, I think there's two things to play there. Well, speaking of that, I forgot to mention writer's strike pretty much done at this point, which is fantastic.
Oh, is it? I didn't know.
I don't know if you saw. Yeah, so we're recording this on Monday, the 25th of September. Sunday, they kind of had the final. This actual four CEOs came in, like the Netflix CEO, Warner Brothers, blanking out or two, but like they all actually came in and sat down. There was a bunch of talks into last week, and they tentatively agreed to a deal today. They're gonna, the WGA is gonna have their lawyers look at it and then send it out to the members to vote. So we're probably within like a week or two, writers will be back to work, which is incredible. Hopefully then, actors will be quickly after.
I was gonna say, is SAG hopefully following shortly after?
I would hope so. I think the CEOs were willing to come down for writers. They'll do the same thing for actors pretty quick.
If you're going to nail something out with the writers, none of that matters. You can't pick back up until you have, you know, actors back on board. So
yeah. So that being said, I think once you see those contracts, like the final what were in them for writers and actors, we'll understand more where the profitability is, the streamers, because that was the thing that was really obfuscated before is like, yeah, how do they assess stuff? We know Netflix was looking at like people who subscribed and then what the first show they watched, like what they subscribed to watch, was a big metric. But now Netflix has an ad-supported tier and Disney Plus is getting an ad-supported tier. So I think it's now a matter of if enough people watch it to generate enough ad revenue that is worth another season. So it's not really about – I'm assuming it's not as about people subscribing for it anymore. It's about just raw numbers so they can get more ad rev. And I think Hulu is probably one of the services most people have with ads, or at least used to be. So – yeah, I mean, if they made enough money on ads, then I think they'll probably do another one. But that's all just conjecture by me.
No, I hope so. And it's, if nothing else, Hulu for sure has the numbers on whatever the streaming equivalents of syndication is. Because Futurama is a show very akin to The Office, where, like, nerds like me, we just watch Futurama like once every year or two.
Yeah.
Like the whole series. So I think it has such a strong core fan base that I would hope to think that they did well enough with this season to have another. And so I guess fingers crossed for that. But
yeah.
On IMDb, it already lists season 12 as a thing, but it's not like they're the, you know, be all end all on that kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's usually, that means it's been renewed, but sometimes it's not accurate. So
sure,
we'll see. Hopefully get another one.
Yeah.
All right, let's end this episode with a couple of game reviews. Because you and I both played a game this week. So I finished, the reason why I was taking a break on Psycho Pass, because a game called Sea of Stars came out, which is a game I've been looking forward to for a very long time, probably 2 years at this point. It's by a team that did a game called The Messenger, which I really, really enjoyed. And this is their crack at a kind of Game Boy era Chrono Trigger-esque JRPG. And it's about these two solstice warriors, they're called. One born on the summer solstice, one born on the winter solstice. They have magic powers and got to save the world kind of stuff. However, the story of the game starts out pretty generic, but it quickly kind of goes on its own path. And I think the outstanding thing about me to this game, one, like, it's fantastic as far as gameplay-wise. Like, the exploration is super fun. The turn-based combat is incredibly satisfying and fun. But the thing that got me about the story was just there's this one character, well, I didn't want to spoil it, I guess, but there's one character who's in the main party who just got me, man. Like, I cry a lot when I watch anime and movies, but I've never cried playing a game. This game got me multiple times, just like tearing up because of this one character and things that happen to them and the things they do. And I just absolutely adored this game on every level. I think it's gorgeous art, gorgeous music, really fun to play, great combat and exploration, and the story was fantastic. The only thing I can complain about is that the two main characters you play as are pretty bland, and you can't really tell one apart from the other one. I think it's because you can play as either one, so they kind of made them very similar, and I wish they would have been a little bit more unique, but yeah, I absolutely adore this game. If you have any interest in turn-based combat or JRPGs, highly recommend it. It's only $35, and it's on Switch and Steam for $35. And then you can play it on Xbox Game Pass and the PlayStation equivalent of Game Pass. So it's very accessible. And yeah, I just adored it. And I'm sad that it's over, but you know, I can't wait to see what the studio does next, because yeah, they got me with this game. So highly recommend Sea of Stars.
Nice.
Perk, what did you play?
I played a little indie game called Between the Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called? Am I right?
I think you're close.
The Gardens Between. Sorry.
There you go. I'm like, that's not quite right, but...
My excuse is that it's only 2.5 hours, so I haven't really spent all that much time with it. But it is a little indie game puzzle game where the main mechanic is you use, just like on a game controller, you use the joystick to either move time forward or move it backward.
Mm-hmm.
And you have two characters, two young friends who their treehouse gets sucked up into a vortex, and essentially they get to live out some of their memories through these intricate puzzles. It's very simple mechanically. You're just either moving time forward or backward.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some things you can interact with. For example, there are some things that are resistant to time. So one of the characters carries a lantern, and you have to get the lantern lit and get it to the finish on every level.
Mm-hmm.
And the light in the lantern is resistant. So once it's in the lantern, it's not going to go away if you reverse time. But there are some cool mechanical things, like at one point there's a platform that is just too high, but there's a saw that's like a little bit of the way in. You can use your character to go back and forth, making them jump up here to jump on top of the saw. And since that saw is time resistant, over this moving back and forth, it cuts the platform, and then it falls to make a ramp.
Gotcha.
Stuff like that. Mechanically, it's kind of similar to Braid.
Braid. It sounds a lot like Braid.
Yes. It's different because it's not really a platformer.
Right.
And
it's not a puzzle.
The puzzles are much more emphasized. I will compare this to another game I played recently, a puzzle platformer, Planet of Lana.
Mm-hmm.
This game does a much, much better job at keeping the puzzles interesting and keeping the pacing moving by giving new mechanics and new things to discover. Whereas Planet of Lana, it kind of just iterates a little bit. You get all these, you get your mechanics pretty early on, and then they just give you like more complicated versions of what is essentially the same puzzle. That's not exhaustive. There are definitely some creative puzzles in there too, but with the shortened time frame of the Gardens Between, the progression feels a lot nicer. It's never dragged out at all, because you have a couple levels and then you move on to a new mechanical area. Couple levels and then you move on. And yeah, only 2.5 hours. And the way they tie in a story with like similarly absolutely no dialogue is really cool, because basically it's the base story is just, it's kind of a investigation into imagination, because these are two kids in their treehouse, and you go solve this intricate puzzle island with like a telescope on it and some stars that you move around the sky. And then at the end of that little area, you see just a snapshot of these two kids like laying in the grass with a telescope looking up at the stars. So that little area was an imaginary expansion on that moment that they had together. And another level, it's them like wandering in the sewers, and you have to turn on and off the pipes, and then shows you the little snapshot of when they did that. And the ending of the movie is a nice little melancholic rug pull, kind of. And so for, as I mentioned with Planet of Lana, the story is a little weaker because it's kind of just, you got to find your sister and save the world.
Yeah.
This game does more for me because it's just, it's such a short little investigation of a relationship and a friendship and imagination. And it ends in a really great way, even if it's, yeah, a little sad.
Sure.
But yeah, so the kicker with this one is that it's a $20 game. And in my opinion, that's too much. But I bought it. It was on sale for $5.
Yeah.
And I'd say it's more than worth $5. It's only 2.5 hours. It's pretty much watching a movie. It's shorter than most of the Bollywood movies. I would highly recommend it if you're just looking for like a cute, comfy indie game to play. It'll stretch your mind a little bit. I got stuck a couple times, but it was easy enough to figure out because mechanically there's only so much you can do. So you can, after a while, if you just kind of toy with
try some stuff. Yeah, it'll.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's like kind of when it's on sale, maybe pick it up. Kind of a.
Yeah, it might still be at the time of listening, but you know, our viewers or our listeners 3 years in the future who come back to this Redline review. Yeah, wait for it to come on sale.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that it was solid. I remember seeing a trailer for that game in like a showcase, and I remember, but I don't remember it like standing out to me, and I didn't really hear anybody talk about it, so I'm glad to hear it was actually good.
I'll admit, I wasn't sold just based on the like art style from afar, and then the first couple levels, I was like, is this all there is? But it's not. It builds really well.
Awesome. Well, there we go. That is a big old episode from us with a bunch of stuff in there.
Episode, yeah.
Yeah. Next week, we're continuing. We have two more movies in our anime film streak, and maybe by the end of it, both strikes will be done. We'll see. But we're going to watch Belle, which came out in 2021. You might remember seeing trailers for it in theaters. I know I saw it a couple times back then, but it is on HBO Max, and our connection is Wendy Lee, who is an English voice actor. She played just as the clerk in Redline. I wonder if she was like the kind of the grandma that was giving him the smokes on the moon. Maybe her. And then she plays Nakai in Belle. So we'll look out for that. But yeah, it's been HBO Max. So Belle on Max for next week. And until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.